Sounds True presents Anatomy of the Spirit, Tape 2, with Carolyn Mace. Let's move up to the fifth. I think the fifth chakra is so intriguing. First, we're going to go into the throat, the neck, the glandular area, and actually the part of the mouth. This is your center of willpower that refers to the choices, the life choices you make, the constant choices you make. I want you to recognize that you don't have to say something in order to make it a legitimate choice. Every attitude you have, every belief pattern you have, every notion you have about reality has something to do, will affect your fifth chakra because it's an act of will. It is an act of will to believe anything. You know, I always refer to the book of Genesis because of the passage in there that says, Yahweh took the earth and breathed his breath into it. And from that, life was created. That image is exactly what we do with our life force. We breathe life into form. This center of our body, the fifth chakra, is mission control for that activity. Now let's look at the tree of life. You have the quality of chesed, referring to the mercy of God. Mercy. Isn't that a rich word? We need to develop mercy, compassion. It is essential. Where is compassion and mercy located? In our fifth chakra, the area of the choices we make. There's another quality there. Gevura, the energy of judgment. Now put these two together, mercy, compassion, and judgment. This is the energy of Solomon. Here in the choices we make. The choices we make of how we see others, of how we interpret experiences, of what we think of others, every thought we have. Imagine that for one moment you could actually get past the illusion and the millions of illusions in this physical life. And if we could for just one second stand as energetic beings outside of our bodies and look at everything around us and see our energy flowing out of us with every choice we made and every judgment we made of another person. If we could see the consequences of that judgment, what if you saw the truth that when you make a judgment of another person, your energy leaves your body, but it's recorded somehow, somewhere, in a schemata we little mortals can't understand, but that we find ourselves 2 days later, 2 hours later, 2 years later, 2 lifetimes later, in the same challenge as that person. Some system is watching us. Some force is paying very close attention to every unit of the spirit that we use. What sacrament supports this? I find this exquisite. The fifth chakra is the sacrament of confession. The capacity to call your spirit back from acts of judgment that we shouldn't have made. Why did they even think of giving us such a rich sacrament? Because we're supposed to not humiliate ourselves. That's the social meaning of it. The powerful meaning of confession is the capacity to close your eyes, use your will, and command your spirit to come back from places, thoughts, fears you've sent it to. Think of the qualities in the fifth chakra. You're going to use your sense of judgment to say with authority, I won't let my spirit leave my body and go into that fear and command me anymore. Or when you recognize you haven't told the truth, you've said something that isn't true about somebody. Just the other day I was reading in Ann Landers where this person writes in and says, If you're going to lie, do it right. And said that this man called up work and said, my wife won't be in today. There's been a death in the family. To which, and this is the woman writing, who said, so I said, who died? And he said, her father-in-law. And she said, wouldn't that be your father? And he said, oh, yes, yes, yes. All right. Now, we don't realize how often we untruth something, how often we stray from the facts, and how often we like to stray from the facts. What do you think gossip is? How often we like to do that. This center of the body is the place that records, shall we say, false rumors that we send our spirit into, agendas, choices we've made to help disempower another person. Let's talk about this against the whole journey. What does it mean to become conscious? It means to become conscious of every single one of these choices that we make all the time. Consciousness is a full-time job. So let's say we decide, I can't possibly become conscious of every thought I have right now. I'm too busy. What if it's enough just to say, okay, I'm going to just refer to the Tree of Life and take a look at the energy of judgment and compassion, and just start with the practice that says, I'm not going to judge that quickly anymore. Instead, I'm going to choose compassion. Not pity, compassion. Instead, I'm going to look at a person, look at a situation, and say, I don't know what's driving that. But instead of choosing to make a judgment and contribute negativity to it, I'm simply going to say, bless them, I haven't got a clue what's going on here, and walk away. In your own life situation, where it would be so easy to judge another person, instead of doing that, recognize what you're doing is you're choking your Tree of Life, because this is where your air comes in. You're choking it. It comes in through here. Every judgment you make chokes your vision, not theirs. You've got to keep that in mind. This is the center of oxygen, the center where the life force comes in, and it comes past your center of will. How do you use confession? What do you do with the sacrament of confession? What I recognized when I was looking at this is that we need to purge ourselves on a regular basis. Perhaps not in front of anyone, in front of God. On a regular basis, we need to light a candle, close our eyes, and say, you know what? I consciously did this, or I consciously did that and I shouldn't have done that. I consciously said a bad thing. I consciously hold bad thoughts. I consciously am aware I have fear instead of faith. Whatever it is you need to confess between you and God, if you want to see your sense of health and energy thrive, I'm telling you, light a candle on a regular basis. And go to confession. Not publicly, between you and God. Why? Because you're calling your spirit back. You're calling it back from places. Light a candle. Turn it into a ritual and say, okay, here we go, God. You know that person drives me nuts. And I'm trying not to have that person drive me nuts. And I'm telling you, I own it. I see it. And I want you to help me call my spirit back. Line up the fears you have. Say to God, I have this ridiculous fear of aging. I have a fear of waking up short. I don't care what it is. But you recognize that every fear is an admission that you have breathed your life force into something other than God. And so what you do is you light that candle and say, as part of your meditation, you image your thoughts coming back from the judgments you've made. Coming back from the people that in the situations you harbor anger in, pull your spirit back. What else? Pull your spirit back from addictions. This is your center. This in your second chakra. Command addictions. What has that got to do with spirituality and consciousness? I think that I have rarely met anybody. I'd have to say I haven't met anybody to my conscious awareness as of the recording of this tape that I would say is not an addict. Now, whether you're an addict to a substance or to a food product or to habits or to attitudes, we all go through the phase of being an addict. Picture your heart, which is right below your fifth chakra, and picture your mind, which is right above it, the sixth, and we're going there next, as the mommy and daddy, and the will as the child. And it's so rare that your mind and your heart agree on anything. So who commands the will? The mind or the heart? As a consequence, as a way of delaying mature choices, we tend to send our will into repetitive patterns that become habitual or addictions as a way of distracting us so that we don't have to, what is the power of the fifth chakra, make conscious, clear, mindful choices. So we let the addictions do it for us. Does that make sense to you? So what happens is, as we go through the maturation of becoming conscious, we have to take a look at how much of our energy we've sent into mindless patterns of addiction that we have to call back. It's not just calling our spirit back from sad memories or people we can't forgive. It's also the many mindless patterns that have authority over us that take the spirit out of us. How many times we find ourselves agreeing with somebody, not because we want to, but because we're afraid not to. That causes a loss of power in this part of your body. How many times you find yourself loaning your will over to somebody and saying, go ahead and use this for someone. Someone says, I've got this great idea. I want you to support me. You don't. You haven't got the courage to say so, but you say, okay, I'll do it. In the process of doing that, you're loaning them your will. And saying, go ahead and use this. And you're resenting it. And that resentment gets registered in your cell tissue. Or how many times have you wanted to react to somebody, but haven't? Or someone said something to you, and you haven't been able to stand up to them, or whatever it is. Every one of those situations causes a loss of spirit. And the sacrament of confession is not meant, in the literal sense, to go and say to God, I did this wrong, 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 wrong. The real meaning of confession is like a Native American empowerment tribal ceremony where you stand up with God and say, I am conscious of where I have misinvested my willpower and I'm calling it back. It's as simple as that. It's not that act of right or wrong. It's a whoa. I want my spirit back from this. Now, I'm going to use a little example so you know when your spirit's back. Imagine I told you that I have a pair of old sneakers on the floor of my bedroom, and they're worn out, and I actually do. And imagine that I'm asking you if, in fact, you have been meditating on the perception that unless you get your hands on those sneakers, you'll never reach nirvana. Now, how many of you have been doing that? I don't see any hands go up. I don't imagine anybody listening to this tape can possibly relate to that and say, no, I haven't. Now, that's what it means to not have your spirit out. You can feel, imagine my sneakers. Imagine envying my worn-out sneakers. You can't even do it. Your spirit won't even leave your body for that. That's what it feels like to have your spirit fully intact in your body. That's what it feels like. If I said, here, you want my pen? I'm holding a pen in my left hand. Are you craving it? Do you feel your spirit leaving your body so that it grabs onto this pen? No. Use this as a reference point. That's what it feels like to know my spirit's totally in my body. Now, what if I said to you, oh, and by the way, I have a letter here for you written by... And picture the one person you want to hear from the most, who's finally explaining why everything has gone upside down in your life. Would you want that letter? Okay, so now let me say I got that letter. It's right here in my right hand. It explains everything in your life, why you had the parents you did, why everything has gone upside down. Here's the answer to everything, plus a Swiss bank account. Now, what if that were really true? And I said to you, I'm not going to give it to you. You would suddenly feel such a rush of power go through your body, directed toward me, that you'd have to grab onto something for balance. And I want you to reference that, because that is your energy leaving your body. I'm not making up something. I'm making up a fantasy nonsense. But I want to give you a reference point so that you recognize those flushes of force that go through you is not just emotion. That's your energy taking flight from your body, attaching itself to the vessel that you now have decided will make you conscious if you get your hands on it. Now, imagine that I now say to you, I show up as your angel, you lucky person. And I said to you, okay, Toots, call your spirit back from needing that letter that woman has. I want you to call your spirit back. And that whole flush of energy raging toward me because I won't give it to you. And your angel says, I said, call your spirit back. I want you to will it back. And you look at me and you'll say, okay. And you look at that letter. And you'll say, come back here. I don't want that letter. I don't need that letter. And your spirit turns around and says, is that the best you can do? Is that the most authority? And you realize, I have no authority over my spirit at all. My spirit goes where it wants to. I have no sense because I have no judgment. Everything scares me. I'm not able to see through illusions yet. And as a result, I'm addicted to illusion. My spirit leaves me for every illusion. What is the journey of becoming conscious if not calling your spirit back from illusion? It's not just people you're angry at. Oh, that's just baby stuff. That's baby consciousness. Get past that. Get into the real work of calling your spirit back from illusions that have authority over you. Fears like, I can't do this, or I'll always be alone. All of that is illusion. Now that's where the work is. And you look at your fifth chakra and you say, I'm confessing that I've released my spirit to an illusion. Okay, God, let's go to work. Break it. Help me break it. Now that's power. And one day what will happen is that illusion will surface in your life some way. Somehow. You'll be in a situation. And you'll be able to step out of it and say, this is no ordinary situation. This is that illusion that's making me recognize I have a fear, and this is the illusion through which the situation through which I can face that fear. Let's play it out. Let's say you have a terrible fear of being alone. Nobody does, so I thought I'd use that one. And because of that, you've made poor judgments. You've decided you can be with this person or you'll stay with this person. And it's destroying your spirit. Your heart is sending you messages nonstop into your will saying, get me out of here. And you keep repressing the choices you should make. Because you're so afraid of being alone. And every time you think about it, you get this panic. And the panic starts in your heart. And your heart starts going faster. Then your hands get cold and sweaty. And your stomach starts turning. The fear of being alone at work or being fired. The fear of being alone romantically. Whatever it is, I want you to focus on that. And what if your angel said, I've had enough of this. I'm going to put you in a situation where the worst you can imagine is going to happen to you. And guess what? You're going to survive it. And when you survive it, you're going to find, what if in the middle of that you were able to remember this conversation and say, I'm going to see this through the lens of symbolism. This is the experience I'm supposed to have to call my spirit back from the fear of being alone. What do I do about that? Make choices, fifth chakra, with judgment and compassion for yourself that says, I need to make the most courageous choice I can in this moment. That's what will break the power of this. So if you have a fear of being alone, choose being alone. Walk into it head on. Thrive in it so that it becomes such a companion to you, so that you see the creative side of being alone, so that you recognize who's alone. It's not possible to be alone. Thrive in that, so that from that moment on, no matter what level of guidance you get, you never again run it past, oh, but God, if I follow that, will I be alone? It has no authority over you. It's no more than the sneakers in my bedroom. Now think of the power that brings in to your tree of life and to the capacity you have to make choices, not only on your behalf, but watch how this works. If you become a strong tree in the garden, you'll be given direction to protect the little trees that are growing underneath you. You'll be given guidance to use your will on behalf of others so that they can grow. You'll be tested, you'll be directed, not just for your own development anymore, but because your spirit has become strong enough to directly, not indirectly, but directly influence the guiding energy of other people. This is how you thrive here. So I'm going to return and say this again. Your fifth chakra is your center of judgment, mercy, compassion, and your center of confession, the capacity to call your spirit back from places you shouldn't have put it. Illusions, not just people. And I want to say again for the record, the biggest illusions to get through are not trying to figure out why someone hurt you. That's baby illusion. The biggest illusions to get through are the deeper ones, why you're afraid to live fully in this life, why you're afraid of your own power, why you are afraid to become all that you are. Those are the bigger illusions. And we hang on to the small ones so we can avoid contact with the big ones. And in order to do that, we will ourselves to stay angry at people so that we can avoid the fact that we're angry at our own cowardice. I ask you again and again, if you listen to this tape, never mind being angry at other people. It's a waste of your spirit. It's such a waste of your spirit. Call your spirit back from that. Instead, say to yourself, I am afraid to become an empowered person, and I'm asking God, walk with me into that fear now. If you need to be alone in that journey, and you often do, take it on head on, no matter where it takes you. And watch what thrives. Let's go into the sixth chakra. Up we go, heading toward the top of the tree of life, the top of ourselves. The sixth chakra, the mental field, your five sensory system, your brain, your intelligence. You know, the chakra center is always represented as the mind, as the center of reality, your capacity to think. In the tree of life, there are two powers connected to this center. The first is chokmah, and it means the contact point between divine mind and human mind. What does that mean? It means the capacity to transcend ordinary thought and to think trans time and space. What does that mean? It means the capacity to grasp consciously eternal sight. We have that power in us. It's contained in this level of our tree of life. Binah is the other power. the companion power in our sixth chakra in the Tree of Life. This is considered the energy of the Divine Mother, the capacity to see everything as giving life, to look through the lens of life, to see all that is through the lens of life. The key that opens that contact point between the ordinary human mind and the divine mind, according to the Tree of Life, is the agreement to say, I will use knowledge only to nurture life. The Divine Mother contract. I'll use knowledge to nurture life, not to destroy. And you know, if you look at the Tree of Life, it gets more and more impersonal as it reaches up to its highest branch. The capacity to just receive knowledge, and the key that opens that door is the agreement, I will only serve life with what you reveal to me. In order to open that, what do we have to get through but all of the illusions of our ordinary life? The many, many illusions, the mental illusions, the negative attitudes we have, the ordinary mortal thoughts we carry in us. What sacrament, then, is the complement to these exquisite powers that exist in our Tree of Life? The sacrament of ordination. Ordination to become a priest. Now, I want to go through ordination in the classic symbolic sense. The sacrament of ordination, in its original meaning, meant that people of the community recognized in you a certain quality that only you had. And they came to you for that quality, whether that quality was the capacity to be a great mediator, always a problem solver for everyone, or the capacity to listen to everybody as they unload on you, or the capacity to make people laugh, or the ability to see clearly with the wisdom of Solomon. The belief is that every one of us is born with something that our community seeks us out for. In my own case, as an example, I was determined to be a publisher and a fiction author, but my community called me to become a teacher. I consider myself ordained as a teacher, and I honor that ordination exactly as such. For me, it is sacred. I look at you, and I'm telling you that within your spirit, within you, is a quality that you need to look at as that which you are ordained to share among others. How do you find that quality? You have to get through the illusions. What kind of illusions? Let's go back to the Tree of Life. You have to get through the illusions that the only way of value to see yourself is through what you do, is through your occupation, is through the production end of your life. That is a human illusion. You have to transcend the package you came in and instead take a look at the spiritual energy that is thriving in you and realize you are someone who has clear sight, or you're someone through whom optimism endlessly flows, or you're someone that people come to because you make them feel good. Now, if you don't think those qualities are God-like powers, you're mistaken. If I said to you, how many of you could point to a quality in yourself that you actually recognize is a gift? Just find one gift. How many of you can't? Just for the record, nobody's raising their hand. I'm relieved at that. So let's say each of you has found a gift in yourself. If I said, just two of you, give me your gifts. What are they?
I'm an artist.
You're an artist. You feel an artistic talent. Very good. Who else?
Touch.
Therapeutic touch? Healing touch? Okay. I want you to take a look at these powers. Your capacity to see things as an artist. So that isn't an artist. It is the capacity to see beauty and to communicate beauty, to communicate healing. Imagine if you recognized from a different point of view that you were ordained to give that out, that this wasn't just a characteristic of your personality, a fluke of the birth, as it were, but rather a power you are ordained. What does ordination mean? It means that you are under orders to treat that part of yourself as sacred, as that which has come from heaven directly to you to give to others. Ordination means to share with others. And that in doing that, what's the result? Your tree of life thrives. Why? Because you begin to have that closer contact between the energy of the divine mind and the human mind. What makes artistry flow? That contact between the human and divine mind. What makes therapeutic touch, the ability to heal, flow? That contact. What makes the energy even more clear is your capacity to see beyond the illusions. I repeat that phrase so much because it's so powerful. The truth is, everything is an illusion, like Buddha said. Everything is an illusion. Not that we're sitting in this room, that's certainly not. But if we were to start interpreting the meaning, every one of us would have 40 different meanings, all of which would be true for each of us and not truth for anybody else. So we begin to get into illusions of who has more power, who's more valuable, whose work is more contributing to this planet. It's so easy to diminish your role, to think that you have nothing to give because you look at it through the lens of illusion. It's so easy to unordain yourself. But if you really did take your power seriously and ordain it, if you lit a candle and said, God, I'm going to honor this part of myself as sacred, as something that I recognize I can give to others. Keep it to yourself. It's only between you and God. Imagine what that would do to help you begin, as we become conscious, to see through illusions that make you challenge why you diminish your self-worth. Why you look at other people or other contributions and think that's so much greater than I. How do you know? If you could see clearly, this is what you would see. Why do you think the divine has always come in humble packages? The birth in the manger. Always power comes in small packages, never in big. It's the mustard seed that knocks down the mountain. We don't get that. The biggest illusion we are completely captured by is that more is better and bigger is necessary. This is absolute illusion. You don't realize, maybe we'll never realize, that the truth is recognizing I'm a kind person. I'm going to make that my sacred energy. I'm a kind person. I have a kind heart. One kind heart has so much power on this planet. We can't see it. I don't think we are capable of recognizing what kindness does. What if you're walking down the street and you see somebody and you have no idea that that person's angel directed them down the street because they knew you would be there. And you find yourself looking in a window and that person walks next to you and you look at them and you say something kind. You say something kind like, that's a nice outfit you're wearing, or it's a nice day. And the person says, yeah, maybe. And all of a sudden, then kindness monitor in you wakes up. And you find yourself saying something totally characteristic of your kind heart. Like, why are you so sad today? And all of a sudden, the stranger says to you, I have just buried my daughter. And you grab the stranger by the hand and you sit on the park bench for maybe a minute, maybe two. And through your heart, an energy you can't even feel is going into that other person's heart. And then it's time to go. And you get up and you leave, never realizing you saved her life. Now, what is power, I ask you? That is power. That is the kind of power that is radiating in every single one of us. It is our tragedy that we eclipse it because we think bigger is better. Now, if you get into your tree of life and you recognize, take a look at the beautiful qualities you have in yourself. Say to heaven, go ahead, use them. Use them. I'm all yours. And let heaven do the rest, because it will not pass you by. And then pray for guidance that you can maintain contact with clarity between what is illusion in your life and what is true clear power. And from that thrives your sixth chakra. And you recognize what it means to be spiritually ordained. Now let's go to the last, the top of the tree. This hovers above your head. This is the seventh chakra. The seventh chakra is the contact point of spiritual life force entering our body. In the Judaic system, in the tree of life, it's called Keter, the life force, a vague word for the great energy coming into us. It doesn't have an identity as close as the others do. As the power makes its way through our body, it gets, if you'll notice, more intimate, more intense. I'm going to walk you through one last time so you recognize how this tree of life and its powers match the level of challenge that goes with that chakra system. The sacrament that goes with this center, the sacrament that goes with this center, is extreme unction, the last rites. Now, in the symbolic sense, the last rites mean release your dead, get into present time. Don't carry your dead. The last rites, not just in the physical sense to releasing a human companion, but think in your energetic sense. We are not meant to take our precious life force and direct it out of our tree with bad judgments into keeping our history alive. We are not meant to carry the dead in the branches of our tree. Now think of the choices that you need to make every day that says to close down the day of your life and say, what am I holding on to that I should have long ago let go of? You might think of memories, or you think of people, or you think of places that you're holding on to because you can't let go of. From now on, I want you to imagine that you are literally directing Keter, your precious life force. You're saying, why don't you invest it in that dead memory? And instead of going into you, it goes into that dead memory. So you're dragging your heavy historic past behind you, weighted down by all these illusions of things you think went wrong, or what could have been. Instead, extreme unction means the capacity to release the dead, to have last rite rituals. With everything you're hanging on to that's haunting you, let it go. We are not meant to carry the dead. Even Jesus said, leave the dead alone, they're taken care of. Yesterday is gone. Get your energy fully into present time. And that makes your entire tree of life, your entire energy thrive. I want to walk you through it one more time. I want to show you how, as it gets grounded, walk you through the tree of life, the chakras, and the sacramental system, and show you that as it gets grounded, every single level of power that we are expected to develop relates more and more intensely to our physical life. The lower we become on the tree, the stronger becomes the illusion. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. I also want to name with each one the impulse truth, merging the three traditions in each center, and gives us a truth that's located in each one of our power centers. So let's go to the top. merging extreme unction and the energy of Keter in the top gives us the universal truth to live in present time. It's an instruction. Imagine this. It's an instruction that pulsates continually at the top of our head. From that, and this is the most impersonal level of our lives, this is just the entry point of the life force. Then the life force drops down. It drops into our sixth chakra. We merge ordination. You merge the capacity to see your own power as sacred. Ordination, to ordain yourself. And to merge it with the energy of Binah and Chokmah, the universal truth that lives in the mental field, in the sixth chakra, is seek only truth. Now let's put these two together, just these two. Live in the present moment and seek only truth. Imagine now that you're actually living from those two power centers. And you find yourself in a circumstance and you have to make a decision. Imagine, ordinarily, if you were using your ordinary senses, you'd be frightened in this moment. You'd be referring to your history where similar situations happen, so that instead of seeing the wisdom in the moment and the clarity, you would let the fear come in. But imagine that you're now reminding yourself, wait a minute, I need to seek the truth. I need to live in present time. I'm going to cut off my fear influence from my past, and now I'm going to make a decision. Your sense of clarity would emerge in a way that you never had it before. Now let's just drop it to the fifth chakra. Look at how it works. From the capacity to mentally see clearly, we naturally go to the fifth chakra, which is, okay, what choices are you then going to make? What choices will you now make with your heart, your sense of self, how you relate to others, and how you relate to your tribe? All of this comes from the fifth chakra. So you look at the universal power in the center of the body, the fifth chakra. And the universal code is surrender your will to God. Surrender to a higher force. Remember, we are on this journey to become conscious. And one of the greatest illusions that we have is that we're in charge of ourselves. One of the greatest illusions we have is that the choices we make can outrun God. It's one of the biggest illusions we make. Here's another illusion. We are totally connected to the illusion that there is a right or a wrong choice. There isn't. The truth is this. It doesn't matter what choice you make. What matters is the energy or the reason behind why you made the choice that you did. That's the determining factor. But we're caught up in the illusion that you think there's a right or a wrong. There isn't. What is the lesson that is expected of us in terms of becoming conscious, finally saying, look, I'm tired of managing this. It's all yours. And you surrender your will. What does that mean? What does surrender mean? The ordinary definition or interpretation is that surrendering means that we no longer have to make any choices, and we live in this sort of ridiculous life where we bounce from one day to the next not knowing what's going to happen. That's not at all what it means. The real meaning of surrendering your will to God is this. Here, I'll give you an example in my own life. When I left my publishing company, I did a surrender. You don't do it once in your life. You do it again and again and again. You live surrender. It's not a one-time show. And I remember leaving my publishing company and thinking that I was terrified to go into this life of being a medical intuitive. I had no idea what my future held. When do we ever? The only reason you hold on to something is because you think you know the future if you hold on to it. All of that is illusion. So when I left the publishing company, I actually did this. I stood on the driveway. I took my car, left the publishing company, pulled it over, and went into the woods. And I said to God, you win. You win. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this work. But I got to tell you something. I have no money. And so my finances, everything, I am just trusting you know what you're doing. And you want to know something? From that moment on, I never had a fear. It's not like some miracle happened. I just suddenly realized something. Not in my head. That's useless. I realized it all the way down to my first chakra, that I was being ordained to teach. So why would that be sabotaged? So I said, okay, open the door. And suddenly, I mean the next day, as usual, with a typical surrender episode, I started to get phone calls, Carolyn, you want to teach here, Carolyn there. Every time I go to teach, I totally surrender. Now, I have to tell you, it's not naivete. The surrender experience is a lifestyle. It's your fifth chakra. Now watch how it thrives in your tree of life. You surrender your will and you say, God's will, not mine. It gives you the privilege of not being frightened by what your ordinary eyes see. It gives you the privilege of being able to say, I don't just depend on human solutions. They usually don't work. It gives you the privilege to recognize miracles are ordinary experiences. So now, the energy flows to your fourth chakra. What is the teaching of Tiferet, of marriage, of the fourth center? It's love. Love is the only true power. Look at this. You're going to surrender to God, then you jump down to the notion of love, which means, okay, if I surrender to you, that means that you're going to direct me to do things that encourage the harmony and life force, not just of my own personal life, but of all those that I touch. That is the way to live here. And now it gets more difficult. What do I have to learn in order to let these beautiful powers thrive in me? Now you jump to where the hard work begins, your third chakra. You have to learn endurance, integrity. These are hard forces. This is how you follow the tree of life. The tree of life is reversed. You see, it says in order for these to happen, look, your third chakra is confirmation, your honor code. And it's hard. Every single teaching says it is so hard to maintain endurance, integrity, and honor on this planet. Every day you're challenged in a million ways. Every day you compromise yourself. And you realize it, or you do realize it and you can't stop it. Think that through. That is the reason why we're given challenges in which we have to endure to make the spirit strong. And then you go to the second chakra, the power of bringing creation into life. And the third chakra, I want to remind you, is the code, honor thyself. Then you go to the universal truth in the second chakra, honor one another. Treat each other with communion. As a holy union, even if you only use that as a therapeutic exercise after you have a horrible experience with someone. I ask you, not for their sake, but for your sake, go to a quiet corner, sit down, and exchange energetic communion with that person, because you're calling your spirit back by doing that. You're doing what's best for your tree of life. And then you feel yourself grounded into the first chakra, Gaia, Shekinah, universal baptism, the baptism of all life, where the code is, all is one. These are the truths. I think we were scripturally designed for this. And when I took a look at these passages and the way we weave the truths of each of the teachings in our biological system, I had a very deep and different reverence for the teachings and the meanings of these rituals of power that literally live and mature within us. Now that I've taken you through all seven, I'm going to introduce you to something else that I'm working on, and that's the eighth chakra. I've been playing around with this for a long time. I want you to hold an image in your head as I describe this. I want you to picture three columns, Then the first column, you have the first, second, and third chakras. In the second column, you have the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. And then in the third column, you have the eighth. Now, I divide those into three columns because I consider it to be three levels of consciousness through which we progress. And the eighth chakra represents to me where we're going. The first column is the most basic form of life. It's our deepest physical illusions, our first, second, and third chakras. These three represent what I consider our connection to the tribal or the group mind, to the things we believe as a group. What kind of things? Well, very often I meet people who think that this particular illness can't be healed because society hasn't seen it healed. That's a group-held belief. What if you decided you weren't going to believe that because you have the illness? And you begin the journey away from believing like the rest of people and trying to discover how powerful it is to believe on your own, where you'd find yourself making the journey through that middle column, your fourth, your heart, your fifth, your will, your sixth, your mind, discovering a level of power within yourself that up until now had been managed by the social or the group mind. And then you would begin to discover just rare glimpses at your eighth chakra, the part of you that was fluent in symbolic language, fluent in the language of heaven, fluent in holding your contract, the agreements you made before you incarnated, your eighth chakra. Now, what does that look like in terms of the whole pattern? How do we work with that? We look at it this way. The eighth chakra embodies the ultimate truths we're supposed to learn. For example, all is one. But we all start out learning that truth as a biological reality before we get to the point where we realize it's an eternal energetic reality. But the first place we always begin the learning is biologically. We take it to the first chakra. And we begin the journey of working through the first column. And the rich part of this is when you begin to realize that everything we believe in terms of the tribal mind, in terms of external truths, in terms of what you think of as ordinary temporary truth, is destined to break down in our lives. We are scheduled to go inside of ourselves on a solo flight. That's what becoming conscious is all about. So you get to the eighth chakra. And you begin to recognize that stored in this place that is not exactly physically located in your body like the seventh is, or the sixth in the mental field, or the fifth right in the throat. But this energy center seems to hover trans your physical form. And it contains information that has us bound to archetypal patterns of growth that are played out within the context of our lives. Now, what does that look like? Well, let me give you an example. One very, very common archetype is the martyr image. Now, let's say you had a contract with the martyr that one of your archetypal agreements was to learn through the martyr archetype. What that would mean is that you would experience in your life certain relationships, not all of them, but some, that would bring out a part of you that allowed you to play the role of the martyr, use the martyr dialogue, feel martyred, suffer like a martyr. Does that mean you were scheduled to suffer? No. It means you're scheduled to work your way through that so that you could get to the point where you realize the martyring was unnecessary. It's almost like discovering how powerful we are through the shadow side of that power. Okay? What you learn in your eighth chakra are all the archetypal agreements that you've made before you incarnated. And when I teach this, I teach it in such a way that I take my students, we pull out their contract, we identify their contract, and you can actually identify relationships in your present life that are being maneuvered by the very archetypes that you are working with. So what happens is you again and again have experiences that help out a great deal when you begin to realize that maybe you're under contract to learn, and you begin to interpret the experiences of your life symbolically. Now let's return to the Tree of Life. When you do that, you are igniting that rich contact point in your sixth chakra between divine consciousness and your own. The more symbolically you can see your life and all the struggles and all the wonderful things in it, the clearer becomes the dialogue between you and God, including the clarity of your dreams. Your dream state increases in clarity. Why? Because the less private agenda you have on your dreams, the more universal your dreams become. The more universally guiding your dreams become. The more you go to bed at night and say to God, just be with me, talk to me, I haven't got an agenda. You can access that higher level of consciousness that exists within the eighth chakra. It's a very rich area of knowledge. When I used to do readings on people, I didn't always see the archetypal images. That happened only in the late 1980s and the early 1990s. When I began to see, for example, I'd start getting the impression of a knight and a damsel around somebody. And I'd realize that they were acting out the knight and the damsel role. And as soon as I saw that, I knew exactly how the scenario would end. That wasn't the ability to prophesize or clairvoyance. That was understanding the nature of archetypal agreements. Every one of us has that. There's a wonderful movie out called Hero with Dustin Hoffman. The movie Hero captures the hero archetype, that when you are under the hero archetype, you have to do a solo journey that embodies the hero energy. Or look at Gorbachev. Gorbachev is the classic prophet, a man of vision. And what happens to the prophet? He's always kicked out of his homeland. Now, if people could understand their archetypal energies, they'd work so much richer with what they're going through and why. But again, going back to this journey of consciousness, this whole journey to become conscious is the journey of learning to access symbolic power. What is symbolic power? It is the energetic force contained within the illusion. Does that make sense to you? It's the energetic force contained within the illusion. Now think this through. Walk with me through this. The more fluent we become in energy, the more you can hold yourself in present time, what happens to us bio-spiritually, chemically, is that we become more energy than matter officially. What does that mean? It means that our spirit becomes stronger than our body. What does that mean? It means that we begin to experience that relationship that's classic to healers or to mystics, that their spirit somehow or other commands, takes force over what's ever happening in their body. They're stronger than the illness. Your spirit becomes stronger than anything happening in the outside world. That's where we're going, where all of a sudden we realize I'm more energy than matter, and we begin to live there full time. Okay, now what I'd like to do is answer some questions that people have written on note cards for me, and so I'll begin with this one. How does one keep from getting overwhelmed? You can't, because it seems to me that work is happening in all the chakras all the time. Yes, you can. You can get a spiritual secretary. You know what? Consciousness is a full-time job. I think it was much easier to be unconscious, don't you? I had it easier on the earth. I certainly did. I liked it much better. I could do a lot more things and say a lot more things. I'm teasing. No, I'm not. you know, what's so incredible is you get to the point where you realize absolutely everything is part of everything. And that can be overwhelmed until you take it with humor. Now, if you want to get through your life and do it well, don't take it personally. No, I mean that seriously. I'm not being funny, and I can be funny once or twice. Begin to see everything as all part of one. Try and live in those ecstasy moments because they're rare. And take them and apply them as strong as you can to those moments when you're down in depression, to when you feel the energy or life force leaving your tree and the branches dying. And when that happens, you know that you have to begin to get up to the top of your tree again. Imagine yourself climbing it. And picture yourself sitting in your treehouse in your seventh chakra in your grace bank account, sitting on top of yourself, looking down over your life, shrink it down to the smallest possible size it can be. And you're sitting on top of yourself in a wonderful treehouse. And sitting next to you in that treehouse is your angel, your guardian. And you say to your angel, help me see this. Help me see this in a different perspective. I'm overwhelmed by the illusion. Get me out of the illusion. Stay in the treehouse until the illusion is so small you can't see it. Whatever it takes to keep you in your treehouse, whether you need to read scripture or listen to 60s music, but stay in your treehouse. And just image all that life force coming and then imagine yourself slowly coming down your treehouse, stopping into each chakra with the thought you want to hold there before you go back into the world. Stop into your sixth chakra, your mental field, where you know the impulses, seek the truth, and remind yourself, I've got to see what's true in this situation. It's going to be hard, but I want to do it. Then go into your fifth chakra, climb down the tree slowly, and see yourself in the fifth chakra saying, I'm going to make some choices here, internal, external. I don't want to say anything I'm going to regret. So program. Be very mindful of your throat, of your fifth chakra. Then go into your heart. Squeeze yourself from the branches into the center of your tree, into your heart. Feel yourself like from those old cartoons, sitting in the heart, and you can see out through the little peephole, but you're inside the interior. And you know how your heart feels, and you know you're afraid to be hurt, or you're afraid that something that's going to harm you is about to happen. And you remind yourself in your heart center what's true, that you need to be loving. If you can't be loving, be respectful, but be positive. Hold on to a positive thought. Then find yourself going down to the third chakra, your center of honor, where you commit yourself to your own integrity. That nothing can shatter your sense of integrity or honor. Then you go down further to the second one, which is yasad, the phallus, the male energy. This is where you can find yourself beginning to vibrate. You're going to find yourself challenged with rage or fear. This can be the point that scares you, where you can lose your power. Instead, see yourself sinking your legs deep, 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 rich into the magnetics of the earth. And the top of your head into the magnetics of heaven and shrink the situation that scares you to no bigger than a minute, no bigger than an ant, and hold that perspective. Hold it and just say, no matter what this sounds like, no matter what I have to go through, this situation has no power. And remind yourself, hold yourself in that perspective. Use that image of the tree again and again and again, so that you maintain your spirit in the tree and that helps you to thrive. How do you develop boundaries that allow you to continue to do what you are ordained to do without depleting your time and energy so that you can maintain marriages and yourself and others? It's a beautiful question. In other words, let me translate this. How do you follow your spiritual development and live a life with others? I thank you, whoever wrote this question, because it's so good. Remember earlier, I mentioned that we do not have a functioning model of what we are supposed to become. So this is part of the crisis that we find ourselves in. What we have entered is the world of mystical development while living the lives of ordinary mortals. This has never before happened. So you find yourselves in the midst of deep and rich mystical crises while having to worry about paying taxes. These two forces have never been under the same roof. So how do you do it? How do you do it? I have to tell you that you can do it, and the best advice and counsel I can give you is don't look for a model outside of yourself, because we don't have one. Rather, the important thing is to remind yourself, we are the generation who is modeling this very thing. So you begin to tell yourself, now jump with me into this perception. We are moving from a time in which our reasoning was very linear and very organized, so that a person from that type of perception would say, okay, I'll give 5 hours to my work, 3 hours to my family, 2 hours to myself, 7 hours to sleep. You do it linearly like this. Now look at what's happening to us. We are shifting from being linear to being holographic, where things are happening simultaneously instead of linearly. So the journey for us is to cease seeing our commitments to our marriage partners, to our families, to our jobs as threats to our spiritual development. Instead, they're our assignments. Mm-hmm. They're our companionship. They are exactly where we're supposed to be. If I could give you one sense of counsel here, from now on, unplug from the notion that you aren't where you're supposed to be, because you are. And if it doesn't make sense to you, and if everything around you has come to stillness, go into your third chakra, jump into yourself as the tree, and recognize, aha, I've been asked to learn endurance. Or I've been asked to learn integrity, and I'm going to be put into a situation that challenges what I'm made of, my honor code. But nothing anymore threatens your spiritual development. Everything serves it. Refocus your awareness. Give yourself a holographic blueprint to work from. All things simultaneous. Everything serves everything. Instead of all or nothing, instead of division of time and space, put it all together. Begin to think holographically. Work from that position. Work from the position that you don't have to be next to someone to send them energy. Work from the position that even if someone isn't on the earth anymore, they're still with you. All things simultaneous. It's such an exquisitely high perception to work with. And I totally believe it changes the biochemistry, not to mention the rest of your electromagnetics. How can we open ourselves to the guidance from our angels and from God? Guidance is the most ridiculously ordinary thing that surrounds you. Guidance is not a big deal. It is not a miracle to receive guidance and stop treating it that way. Turn it around and expect guidance everywhere, even at Kmart. I'm not playing games. I'm telling you that being in communication with your non-physical world is as ordinary. Stop treating it as though it's extraordinary. Number one, stop that. Number two, stop that. And number three, stop thinking you need to do something special to receive guidance. Be something special and eat tofu. No. The only thing that it takes to receive guidance is to listen. What is guidance? Guidance is not vision. Guidance is not the capacity to receive a letter that says, here, you've got a Swiss bank account, you've got a new job and a new mate waiting for you, bought you a plane ticket. That is not guidance, though that's how we want it to be. Guidance is this. I know I'm not happy, and I'm getting guidance that I'm not happy. That qualifies as guidance. How many of you know you're depressed? Okay, that's guidance. Okay? Your next step is to say, okay, what am I supposed to do about the depression? You'll instantly get a response. Whether or not you want to do it is another thing. You may hear something like, just walk every day. Oh, get out of here. That won't do anything. That is guidance. You have to be able to remember that guidance is the subtlest forces. You'll rarely get a messenger from heaven as a UPS driver. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? It is these subtle things. Start listening to the small, powerful messages that come into you all the time. And if that doesn't work, ask yourself, when you ask a question of God, like, I need guidance on this, articulate the thing that would scare you the most. Say it. The answer to the prayer that would scare me the most, if God suddenly told me to sell my house, move from Boulder, and move to West by God, Virginia, that would scare me the most. Then I would suggest you get a real estate agent and get going. Do the thing that scares you the most. Jump into it. Why would I tell you to do something like that? Because the more risks you take in this life, the more angels show off. Okay? I'm not being funny. I'm not even being mystical. I'm telling you the way it is. Look, again and again and again, every single role model you ever have of somebody who has left it all and gone with God, the identical pattern is present. One, they end up doing something they were never trained to do. Two, their needs are always met. Three, they begin to live a very adventurous life, one they didn't see coming. And because of that, they're freed from the hideous burden of expectations. How can you have expectations when you're living a life you didn't even see coming? I encourage you, walk into the mystery. And every time you don't understand something, instead of letting it scare you, go to the positive side of your mystery. Get elated about it. How do we encourage the shift to this level of consciousness of which you speak within the tribal institutions of this and other cultures, i.e. the medical health care systems and the educational system? You know what? All you need to do now, this is where, if you were angels in training, I would answer it this way. Entering the world of power, the way I'm talking to you about it, working with your internal power instead of your external, changes the rules through which you can live your life. What's really happening is you're going from being a mountain to becoming the mustard seed. Now listen to what that means. It means that you don't need to do mountainous things anymore, because you're going from cologne to perfume. You're becoming high voltage, which means that one high voltage clear prayer beats a confused cathedral any day of the week. Okay? So when you say, how do we change things in the institutions or the tribes? By internal example. By the manner in which you conduct yourself. Now watch. I'm about to jump out of my chair. I want you to understand this. You're working with symbolic power now. You're beginning to realize, I am the tree of life. I have a high voltage quality of power. How do you use symbolic power? Imagine there's an institution, the medical system, if you will, as somebody just wrote down here, and you want to send it positive energy, and you are at home with your family, and you say, I am transferring some of the energy that's being generated by my wonderful institution of marriage and family to their bank account, and hopefully would be distributed into their collective psyche as yet another image to move in a certain direction of the right balance of power. Do you see what I'm saying? What does it mean to pray for someone else? What do you think you're doing? That's email, energy mail, where you begin to realize, I don't need to work in the physical world anymore to be of impact or to be powerful. It's enough for me to work in the energy world. Here's my last question. When does life get easier? Okay, I'm going to make up an answer. I think that the greatest myth we have is that spirituality is the journey to an easier life. That somehow or other becoming conscious is our way to living a life in which we will never again know pain or confusion and nothing will go wrong anymore. It's quite the opposite for a period of time, and I don't know how long. But becoming conscious, becoming a spiritual life, I don't know, I guess it means this incredible journey of becoming aware of how intimately connected we are to God, that not one thought goes unrecorded, not one prayer, not even the people you sit next to is an accident, not even the restaurant you went to for lunch, that we live in this paradoxical universe where everything is that intimate and at the same time that impersonal, both simultaneously. So we look for things to get easier. They don't get easier, they get more awesome. They get more awesome. It becomes incredibly more awesome to recognize, oh my God, I just needed that person to call and they did. Who delivered that message? When all of a sudden things become more awesome. And then more awesome when you begin to say things like, you know what, I know it's going to work out because I have faith. And all of a sudden, it does work out. And you find yourself every day making these interesting connections, an intimate union with this non-physical force called God, where all of a sudden, even your own death doesn't scare you. Where you have no sense of ending at all. Where all of a sudden you have this ridiculous high that comes in strange times during the day, where you feel connected to everything that's alive on this earth. It's the strangest high I've ever had. It's ecstatic. Where there's a level of, I don't want to call it love, that's not a big enough word. There's a level of luscious divinity, alive divinity, that flows through you where you think, if I could hold everybody in my heart right now, I'd do it. It's the most incredible high. And then it evaporates and your feet are back on the ground and life looks ordinary again, but you know it's not. You no longer have the privilege of seeing anything or anyone as ordinary. Those days are over. Those days are over. All of a sudden you realize somebody, you look at somebody who doesn't know what you know yet. They're desperate and you sit next to them and say, you know what, anything is possible. This baby can be healed. A miracle can happen. And they say, no, it can't. Oh, yes, it can. You think linearly, I think holographically. I don't think it's wise to tell them, just pray for them and watch what happens. We are becoming that new generation of life. We have such a contract to each other and to all that is. It is just no accident that we're here. Life is probably not going to get easier in the social sense of it or in the financial sense. It's rocky out there. And I think we have some rocky years ahead of us, if not decades. At the same time, I don't think the heavens have ever poured forth such an abundance of people being drafted into divine service as a priority with all the privilege that entails. You're not ordinary anymore. Don't let that scare you. Now to close, a prayer that captures everything that I try to teach. This was written by Reverend Jim Cotter, an Episcopal priest in England. And he's a mystic, and he composes prayers and does gorgeous work. I asked him if I could have the privilege of including this prayer in my book and on my tapes, because it means so much to me. God be in my head and in my understanding. God be in my eyes and in my looking. God be in my mouth and in my speaking. God be in my tongue and in my tasting. God be in my lips and in my greeting. God be in my nose and in my smelling. God be in my ears and in my hearing. God be in my neck and in my humbling. God be in my shoulders and in my bearing. God be in my back and in my standing. God be in my arms and in my reaching. God be in my hands and in my working. God be in my legs and in my walking. God be in my feet and in my grounding. God be in my joints and in my relating. God be in my guts and in my feeling. God be in my bowels and in my forgiving. God be in my loins and in my swiving. God be in my lungs and in my breathing. God be in my heart and in my loving. God be in my skin and in my touching. God be in my flesh and in my paining. God be in my blood and in my living. God be in my bones and in my dying. God be at my end and at my reviving. Thank you. Thank you.